Good evening and welcome to the Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara. Tonight in the Dáil, the focus is on Minister Alan Shatter before a confidence vote tomorrow. We'll discuss that and more startling revelations about recorded phone calls, this time within the prison service. First, we'll listen to the news read by Eileen Whelan.
Good evening. The Irish Prison Service has confirmed that 139 prisoners had their telephone conversations with solicitors recorded while in custody. Earlier, the Taoiseach Enda Kenny told the Dáil that 84 inmates had their conversations recorded. The Prison Service said inmates are given a confidential phone line for conversations with a named solicitor, but because some inmates had more than one solicitor representing them, but only one named with the Prison Service, the other conversations were inadvertently recorded. The Prison Service has said the following consultation between its IT section and the prisoner phone service provider, a further 55 prisoners had been identified having a second solicitor listed on the system. The Justice Minister has said recordings of phone calls at Garda stations has the potential to have been a serious invasion of citizens' right to privacy. Alan Shatter defended his record and accused his opponents of trying to create a diversion from the fact that the taping system dates back to their time in office. He was speaking in the Dáil during a Fianna Fáil motion of no confidence in him. Here's Micheál Hann of our political staff.
You've lost all confidence, all trust and can do nothing to restore it. That charge from Willie O'Dea in keeping with Fianna Fáil's attack on the Justice Minister tonight. They urged him to resign immediately. His response was that he doesn't get everything right, but Alan Shatter said he was addressing problems like the Garda phone recordings controversy that date back decades. There was praise for the Minister from his colleagues, Simon Coveney describing his record as remarkable. Labour Party Minister Pat Rabbitt also expressing support for the Minister. Earlier, the former Garda Commissioner's letter about the secret phone recordings was published. A report too from the Secretary General at the Department of Justice was made public. Brian Purcell said the explosive nature of the recordings in the Ian Bailey case could have deflected attention from the wider issue. Mr. Purcell said he briefed the Minister on the matter on the evening of March 24th last.
Gardaí in County Sligo are investigating a crash which resulted in 11 people being taken to hospital. The collision between a van and a minibus happened shortly before 5 o'clock on the Colooney to Ballygawley Road. There were two adults and one child in the van and a male driver and 7 teenagers in the minibus. All were taken to Sligo Regional Hospital, but none is believed to be suffering from life-threatening injuries. Permanent TSB Bank has confirmed that all services are now operating normally again after being disrupted for part of the day. Customers had earlier been unable to access the bank's phone and internet banking services due to a technical problem. Finally, tonight's Euro Millions jackpot was worth €15 million and the winning ticket was sold in Ireland, so check your tickets. The weather forecast, mild and misty overnight with spells of rain becoming fairly widespread along with some hill and coastal fog. Some heavy bursts of rain are likely with possibly the odd thundery burst also. Lowest temperatures 5 to 9 degrees in a moderate to fresh easterly breeze. And that's all for now. News again at 11, but now back to the Late Debate.
Cormac Mogget, Eileen, you're welcome back to the Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara, standing in for Audrey this evening. Joining me in studio is Patrick O'Donovan of Fine Gael, Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, Michael Clifford of the Irish Examiner, and Tom O'Malley, lecturer and barrister, joins us from the studio in Galway. You can contact the programme by text on 51551, by email latedebate@rte.ie, and you can follow us and interact on Twitter at latedebaterte. The debate on the motion of no confidence in the Minister for Justice, Alan Shatter, began this evening in the Dáil. The opposition hoped last week this would keep the pressure on the Minister for Justice, but that was done today by more startling revelations from within the justice system itself. Today we learned of more phone call recording revelations, and this time within the prison service. I'll turn to you first of all, Tom O'Malley. Is this as serious as the last set of revelations that phone calls were being recorded in and out of Garda stations?
Well, it may not have the same consequences quite now. We don't know, of course. The problem is, as everybody knows now, we don't know quite what's on those tapes in the Garda stations. But there is the possibility, and it may be no more than a vague possibility, that they could have serious consequences for people who are either facing trial or perhaps people who are already convicted. However, with in the prison situation, there's no doubt that this recording should not have taken place. It may have been inadvertent, but I think it's now well accepted as a matter of constitutional law and indeed under the European Convention of Human Rights that prisoners' correspondence, and that, of course, include their telephone communications, should not be routinely intercepted listened to. I beg your pardon?
But why not?
But essentially because there is a right to privacy. I mean, the if you like, the rights of prisoners generally have been increasingly recognised over the years. And while it's accepted, of course, that a person who is in custody serving a prison sentence has to suffer a serious reduction in their rights generally, the courts, both here and in Europe, have been quite adamant in saying that they shouldn't be, that you don't, if you like, divest yourself of all your rights when you enter prison. It's also, of course, accepted that it is necessary very often to monitor, for security reasons, to monitor phone calls and correspondence and so forth, and that is accepted. But I fear that what may be involved here is something that, the, let's say, the European Court does not tolerate, which is the routine indiscriminate monitoring or recording of calls, which would, of course, violate the right to privacy of the prisoners in question if it is found that there wasn't a valid reason or there wasn't any kind of justification for doing so on security grounds. So, again, I don't think that the this information or this recording of calls within prisons would place in jeopardy any convictions, let's say, because all the indications are that none of this information was shared with anybody outside the prison. But it may well result in, let's say, prisoners taking civil actions against the state, saying that their right to privacy was violated. Again, I'm not saying that all of those actions would succeed, but some of them may, and some of them may be entitled to compensation as a result.
Would the compensation be of a significant amount? I know we're really guessing here, and it's hypothetical because we don't know the actual the components of any case. But
it probably wouldn't be of a very significant amount. I seem to recall that back in the mid 1980s, when there was one of the first cases that came forward was about a prisoner's written correspondence being monitored by the prison system, and the correspondence was left outside, I think, in a bag in the prison yard so it could be seen by other people. It was held there that the prisoner's right to communicate was violated, and I think he got a very, very small sum of money at the time by way of compensation. I seem to remember it was about £25 because it was felt that it was no more than a nominal breach. But again, I suppose we'd have to look at, you know, the extent of the recording and the extent to which it was necessary or otherwise. But I would think in some cases, at least, there may be some measure of compensation due to the prisoners in question if it's found that there was no basis for the recording.
Now, nearly 3,000 phone calls have been recorded, we're told, this evening. 139 prisoners who are still in custody had their phone calls recorded. Do you think that's extensive within the prison population in total?
Well, I suppose it's an indication of the extent to which phone calls within prisons are recorded generally. Obviously, it seems if that 3,000 phone calls consists exclusively of calls between prisoners and their solicitors, you know, it is, given that there's only 139 prisoners involved, it does seem like very, very extensive recording indeed. And it's extraordinary, if you like, that the mistake that took place, if it was a mistake, whereby they failed to account for the fact that some prisoners might have more than one solicitor, it does appear to have gone on for a long time and involved an extraordinarily high number of cases. So again, that would, I suppose, point to the conclusion that the practice really wasn't excusable, inadvertent though it may be. Therefore, I suppose it would strengthen the hand of some prisoners who might like to take action as a result of it.
Michael Clifford of the Irish Examiner, we were told this evening by the government that this was an anomaly, that it was done, the recording was done inadvertently. Do you accept that? Is that plausible?
I'd say it is plausible in the context of, it would seem that most of the recording done in the Garda stations would also seem to have been somewhat inadvertent. I mean, from what I can gather and from everything we heard from Garda representatives associations, both the rank and file GRA and the AGSI, the vast majority of officers did not think that, apart from the 999 calls and the dedicated line, one dedicated line coming into these HQs in each division, that there was much recording at all.
But we were also told that phones had stickers on them to let people know that they were being
recorded. Yes, and that's as I understand, that was one dedicated phone. Now, that phone would not be used by, for example, people in custody phoning out. That was generally the main line into the station. But apart from those, as I understand it, most Gardaí weren't aware that any of the calls were being tape. And it also raises two issues about it in terms of the Bandon case, for instance. It seems that if there's a suggestion that some Gardaí were incriminating themselves, then surely they didn't know that their calls were being recorded at that time. And there's one other element to notice the escape.
I can turn to Niall Collins. Just specifically Niall Collins on the prisoners' phone calls being recorded, because we'll get into the other stuff. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean it's a new dimension of it. The whole issue when it came into the public domain last week, it was obviously serious in the context of the Bailey case, and certainly the government packaged it that it was going to be that there was potentially far-reaching consequences, and that potentially there could be a whole raft of miscarriages of justice declared. But in the days that have followed since Tuesday of last week, this day last week, there doesn't seem to be any evidence to support that notion that there's going to be a whole series of miscarriages declared. In relation to what has come out this evening about prisoners, again, we just have to wait and see over the next couple of days as to the scale and the extent of it. Is this linked to any particular case, like you've had the high profile, the Bailey case, in relation to An Garda Síochána? And I think undoubtedly it will have to be included in the terms of reference of the Commission of Investigation.
But surely this is another example of something within the justice system that has gone on for a number of years now, that has been picked up now inadvertently or on purpose or whatever, and the minister is dealing with it.
Yeah, and it's amazing that like the Garda telephone recording issue, it has gone on, yet nobody seems to know that it has gone on, and it suddenly it jumps to the top of the agenda. The whole Garda issue, for example, went on, we're told, anywhere between 25 and has been going on for 25 or 30 years, and all of the current minister didn't know about it, and all the previous ministers didn't seem to know about it either, at least the ones who were on the public record. So the Commission of Investigation will help to get to the bottom of that.
And surely Fianna Fáil has laid down a vote of no confidence in Minister Alan Shatter this evening. But surely he's shown gumption when these issues have raised their heads that he's dealing with them head on.
Well, we put down the motion of no confidence. Like, we've long lost confidence in Alan Shatter to oversee the administration of justice. It's in fact the second motion of no confidence that we've tabled in Alan Shatter in almost 12 months. There has been a litany of issues which we've taken exception to. We disagree with, for example, his policy in relation to community policing, and you've had the whole mishandling of a whole series of events. So we didn't take the decision lightly. We get asked quite frequently, why don't you table a motion of no confidence into the minister? We're reflecting what communities are saying out there. And I think what isn't coming out, or certainly what didn't come out in the debate so far tonight, and we're halfway through the no confidence debate, the minister spoke, Minister Simon Coveney spoke, and Minister Pat Rabbitt spoke, and none of them addressed in any of their contributions in any way at all anything to do with the premature departure of the Garda Commissioner from his post. And that's where the public are quite concerned about that. Why? Because the Garda Commissioner, the Minister reached for the Garda Commissioner as an example of a success story all along. In terms of crime detection rates being improved and the fight against crime, and all the time they were pointing to the good stewardship of An Garda Síochána by Martin Callanan, and then suddenly when the minister and the government were in the dock over the whistleblowers and the treatment of the whistleblowers, and we now know, of course, that the Garda Commissioner was minded to apologise, this other issue suddenly became so grave, and then you had the premature departure of the Garda Commissioner, which is unexplained, and I think it has to be explained.
Okay, we'll come to that. Patrick O'Donovan of Fine Gael is sitting beside you. I assume you do have confidence in the Minister, Alan Shatter. Tell me why.
Well, I give you a very good reason why, and Niall alluded to it there in a very articulate way. He talked about community policing, because Alan Shatter managed to do something, for instance, in the area of community policing that Fianna Fáil had surrendered. Fianna Fáil had committed to a standing force of the Gardaí of 11,000. The Minister for Justice was able to renegotiate with the Troika to get the standing force of 13,000. So, you know, it's easy to talk about community policing, but we would have had 2,000 fewer Gardaí had Fianna Fáil continued in office.
OK, I take that point. Now, on how he dealt with these issues, the penalty points, the Callanan affair...
Well, if you look at what he has done since he has been made aware of all of the issues, he has addressed all of them by way of investigation, by way of inquiry, and in the most latest one, through the establishment of the investigation under Mr Justice Finlay. And actually, one of the interesting things that was said in the Dáil tonight by the Minister himself was, you know, when he became aware of these issues, how anybody could, you know, rationalise that it would be in his interest to ignore them or try to bury them or forget about them or anything like that, considering he wasn't Minister for Justice when these things were going on. These things were going on primarily during the lifetime of the last administration. And it's almost as he's getting personal blame for issues that he wasn't even in government for.
Even if you take one of the elements or one of the results from the cabinet meeting this morning, we have a cabinet subcommittee now on justice and policing. Is that not really, which the Taoiseach will chair, is that not really the government, the cabinet saying, look, we have to put a team together behind Alan Shatter because we don't really trust him on this issue?
No, we've cabinet subcommittees on a whole range of issues. We've cabinet subcommittees on social policy. We've cabinet subcommittee on the Irish language. We've a cabinet subcommittee on finance.
We didn't have one on justice and policing until today.
Yeah, well, we have one now, and I think the reason that we have one now
on the eve of a confidence vote in the minister.
No, I mean there's a lot of reforms that have been initiated by the Minister for Justice, even outside of the recent controversies.
Did he need a scrum behind him? Is that what the cabinet is saying?
No, I think what this shows is that this is a clear demonstration of the fact that the coalition are totally united behind the reform of the justice, particularly the criminal justice system, most of the elements of which were ignored conveniently by the previous administration, and it's yet another legacy of you-know-what that we're left to clean up.
But is it not really the fact that Minister Alan Shatter has gone from crisis to crisis, from week to week, and suddenly on the eve of a confidence vote in the minister himself, the cabinet decides to put a scrum behind him, to put a cabinet subcommittee behind him?
You're almost suggesting that the minister would have created, as you, in inverted commas, the crisis. At the end of the day, what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with issues that have been, in some cases, around since 1980. A systematic kind of a development of either practices or policies within the Gardaí and the Department of Justice and elsewhere that was left go on, in some cases left going on, probably unknown. It would be very interesting to see, you know, going back into the early 1980s for former office holders of the Department of Justice or even former office holders in the Garda Commissioner's Office, you know, who knew what. And I'm sure that Mr Justice Finlay will be able to get to the bottom
of it. Isn't that fair, Niall Collins? You're trying to pin something on Alan Shatter. That was happening on your watch as well.
No, in fact, and I said this in the statements in the Dáil last Wednesday, I said it quite direct to Minister Shatter in the Dáil, nobody is blaming Alan Shatter for the telephone taping within the Garda stations, which has went on for the last 30 years, nor would I seek to. But the point is this, the Garda Commissioner was shafted. There is no getting away from that. And why was he shafted? And the timing of him being shafted is something which needs to be explained.
He didn't say he was shafted. He said he was retiring so he wouldn't distract from the day-to-day operations of an Garda Síochána. Are you putting words in the Garda, ex-Garda Commissioner's mouth?
You know, Micheál Martin raised this last week directly at Leaders' Questions with the Taoiseach. And he put it to the Taoiseach that the Taoiseach was involved in shafting the Garda Commissioner. And the Taoiseach got all offended. You know, are you accusing me of being a liar? But the Taoiseach hasn't explained. And I've already said to you that none of the speakers in the motion tonight have explained the context of the meeting on the Monday night between the Taoiseach, the Minister for Justice, the two Secretary Generals, and the Secretary General, Brian Purcell, being dispatched to the Garda Commissioners.
And I know what Micheál Martin said. I know how the Taoiseach responded. But your purple prose, with all due respect to you, you can't use that to put words in the mouth of Martin Callanan. You said he was shafted. He didn't say so.
Yeah, well, I mean, sources close to him and your own reputable reporters are reporting and your own news agency is reporting it. So, you know, I'm relying on your organisation, Cormac.
Must be true, so.
And, you know, the fact is this, that Martin Callanan was dealing quite progressively and comprehensively with the whole telephone recording issue You know, we know we go right back to last November when he involved the Attorney General's office, and we can walk you right through all the meetings and the events which happened right up until last Tuesday morning.
And Mick Clifford, you want to get in?
The Garda Commissioner was acting proactively, but yet he was the man that got shafted.
We'll find
so that has to be explained.
Minister Shatter and former Commissioner Callaghan, excuse me, were involved in two distinct areas. One was to do with the whistleblower, and people concentrated on the remarks that the Commissioner made and the misleading of the Dáil that the Minister was involved in saying they hadn't cooperated. Both of those remarks were merely symptomatic of hostility towards the whistleblowers and the allegations that the whistleblowers were bringing to the fore. That was one issue. Personally, I think both of them were highly culpable in that regard, in terms of their attitudes, and it would certainly seem from everything we know that the Minister took his lead from Commissioner Callaghan. Now, in relation to the second issue, it would seem that Martin Callaghan acted promptly and properly once he became aware of this idea about the recordings. It would also seem that those within the Department of Justice did not raise a red flag, which would suggest perhaps they didn't regard it as being that serious. Now, that's at odds with the reaction of Enda Kenny, which they immediately set up a commission of inquiry that suggested it was very serious. And for that reason, you have to suspect that the Commissioner was shafted because it was politically expedient to do so, including, hopefully, from their perspective, that it would save Minister Shatter. If you ask me, he got shafted for the wrong reason. He did everything promptly, according to the tape recordings. He did not behave properly in regard to the whistleblowers. And the same goes for the Minister.
Patrick O'Donovan, then. Minister Martin, or Commissioner Martin Callaghan was shafted by the government.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, on the one hand, you have people saying that we need to get to the bottom of everything that happened. And then, while you know, in the aftermath of setting up an investigation, everybody jumps to conclusions. There's an investigation having been set up now by the government under Mr. Justice Findlay. And I think it's only appropriate to leave that individual find out exactly what happened. I mean,
it is, but there are very, very simple questions.
Well, it's a simple,
there are very, very simple questions.
But it's a simple suggestion to,
that you
to,
can ask. That you do not have to leave to a commission of investigation. I mean, I can ask you this evening, very simply, why do you think Martin Callaghan retired suddenly?
I don't know why. I read Martin Callaghan's statement, and I'm not going to presuppose that I know something other than, you know, what's written in his statement. His statement was very clear. I wasn't at the meeting between, you know, Secretary General of the Department and himself. I don't know whether anybody else was or not. And I'm not going to presuppose the outcome of an investigation. This is a very serious issue. It's been treated seriously. And I have...
You're stonewalling.
I'm not stonewalling. I have no notion of adding speculation to speculation and innuendo to innuendo and coming up with some sort of a harebrained conclusion without the investigation.
Would you not like to find out why the Taoiseach sent a senior official from the Department of Justice over the head of Minister Alan Shatter to the Commissioner?
And I'm sure it'll be found out and it'll be reported to the Dáil.
Have you not tried to find that out already as a TD?
Well, do I have access to Martin Callaghan?
Have you not asked within government? You have access to an Taoiseach. You have access to the Minister for Justice, Alan Shatter. Have you not asked? Have you actually asked?
The Taoiseach has established...
Have you asked?
Can I answer the question? The Taoiseach has established an investigation to find out here what has happened. He has treated it seriously. So much so that if I came in this evening and there wasn't an investigation coming up or having been established by the government, you'd be all levitating, jumping up and down, wanting an investigation. Now we have it. And people are presupposing that they know the outcome before we even have it.
You were a parliamentarian elected by the people. Surely your supporters will be asking, have you made representations? Have you asked the minister? Have you asked
the Taoiseach? And I tell my supporters exactly what I'm telling you, that the government have set up...
So no is the answer, is it?
Are you going to let me answer? I'll answer, you know, I'll answer if I'm allowed.
But that's the point, you're not answering.
When my supporters ask me what am I doing, I'd say I'm going to wait until such time as the investigation is concluded. It'll be debated in the Dáil, it'll report to the Dáil. We'll find out exactly what happened, who said what to whom and when, and the decisions that arrives at in before
enduring that whole process. And I think it's only fair that time and space be given to allow this. Because what have we at the moment? We have a very serious issue being turned into a political football and an attempt to get a political head. And that's all tonight was about. Tonight wasn't about the substantive issue. Tonight was about hanging the whole issue on a time frame with a view to trying to see if you could pin something on the Minister for Justice that a chink in the armoury to bring him down.
Are you not worried about the fact that the Taoiseach sent a senior official from the Department of Justice to Martin Callanan on the eve of a cabinet meeting to tell Martin Callanan how the government felt, and it subsequently comes to light that the government, the cabinet, didn't feel anything about this because they didn't know?
Well, we don't know what was said in the conversation between the official and the commissioner, but we do know one thing, and that is that this matter was of such seriousness that the Taoiseach decided to act in the manner in which he acted, and he briefed the leaders of the opposition in advance of the Dáil sitting that day. He briefed the cabinet, and, you know, he treated it so seriously to set up a commission of investigation. And I think that
when on Taoiseach sent the official, did the cabinet know what was going on?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a member of the cabinet because the cabinet meeting wasn't until the Tuesday.
Did you not ask?
No, the cabinet meeting wasn't until the Tuesday. So, I mean, the cabinet were briefed on the Tuesday. The Minister for Justice and the Taoiseach.
It seems to me you're not asking many questions about this affair at all.
Well, what I'm telling you is what I know. And what I know is that this issue is being treated as seriously enough to ask a serving
to deal with this. The issue also arises here. As we've seen from the report from the Department of Justice, everybody's concentration was on the Bailey case, they suggest, and that's why they were deflected from the overall thing of the recordings. That immediately begs the question, why is the Commission of Inquiry, or a Commission of Inquiry, not set up into that which it's crying out to be set up into, and that's the whole handling of the Bailey case? If you go all the way back to the DPP's critique, you see this thing now which arose, and it would suggest, again, is it a question that the overall commission was set up into the recordings in a very quick manner in order to deflect, A, from the political difficulties of the minister in relation to whistleblowers, and B, again, from the Bailey issue? Because if you look at the history of cases like the Bailey case, what happens is they are long-fingered until such a point that there is a settlement and the dirty linen is not washed in any form in public. If there's a commission of inquiry, there's a whole range of stuff there that would tumble out that is very unpalatable.
But Tom O'Malley, could we have a commission of investigation into the handling of the Bailey case if there is a case live involving the Bailey case at the moment?
Certainly, if it was a criminal case, you couldn't have a commission of inquiry or an investigation of any kind, even though a commission of inquiry conducts its proceedings privately. And I think, however, even though what's happening in the Bailey case is a civil suit where Mr. Bailey is seeking damages for false arrest, it would probably not be appropriate at this point to have a commission of inquiry into it. It doesn't mean to say that later on there might not be, but I think it would be probably better to wait and see to what extent the relevant information about this will emerge in the course of court proceedings if they take place. But that doesn't mean to say, of course, that the commission that is now being established cannot do very useful work in dealing with the with the taping of conversations in Garda stations.
Do you think, Tom O'Malley, that the terms of reference of this commission of investigation should be as broad as possible?
Well, this is going to be the real question as to what, in fact, the commission will be asked to decide at all. I mean, a commission of investigation is a bit like a tribunal of inquiry, with one important difference, and that is that most of its deliberations take place in private. The reason why this kind of institution was established in the first place back in 2004 was to ensure that investigations of this nature could be carried on more quickly, efficiently and more cheaply than tribunals, and also that they would make an effort insofar as possible to get people to give evidence voluntarily. But it is supposed to be, the statute itself sets out that the terms of reference should be drafted sufficiently narrowly, if possible, in order to make it manageable, in order to keep down costs and to keep it within a fairly manageable time frame. So it depends really on what the government decides is the priority. For example, Is the commission going to be responsible for investigating what's actually on these tapes? I would suggest that that's better done by perhaps people in Garda headquarters in order to investigate what's there. But the two things can go on at the same time. But I suppose they'd be trying to find out why and in what circumstances that process or that procedure of taping calls actually came into existence. Mm. Who authorised it? Why did it continue? And matters of that nature, and I suppose ultimately to try to make some assessment as to what kind of impact it may have on the administration of justice.
Do you think, Niall Collins, that we should have a tribunal, a root and branch look at how the justice system works, given the amount of reports and investigations that we have at the moment? Should we not have one big overarching investigation?
No, I don't, because I think we probably all agree on this, that the experience of tribunals of inquiry in this country has been quite negative. They've tended to drag on too long and they've cost too much. And the limited experience of commissions of investigation under the 2004 Act has proven to be quite successful. We've had the inquiries into, for example, the institutional abuse of children, and they led to a number of quite comprehensive reports. So from that point of view, I think it's the only show in town in terms of getting to the truth.
When you look at, and this is from the top of my head, you can correct me on this as well, the amount of reports and investigations that we have into these affairs or crises up until now, the commission of investigation into the phone calls, now the report requested of Alan Shatter into prison service phone call recording, the Gearin report or review on penalty points, the Cook investigation, the Internal Department of Justice report, the Garda Inspectorate report, I think the the Controller and Auditor General report a while back,
and
as well,
GSOC into
the
penalty
GSOC
points.
Internal. So yeah. How many more reports and investigations and reviews can we have before somebody says, God almighty, Patrick Donovan, we should have a more wide-ranging look at the justice system?
Well, I suppose that proves the point that the whole area was in dire need of reform anyway. And one of the things that has been done in the aftermath, I can't remember, was it the GSOC one that was done, was the Justice Committee in the Dáil now are going to look at, I suppose, the overarching issues that are there. And, there's no doubt about it. You're right, there's a lot of reports going on. The reason there's a lot of reports going on is there was a lot of stuff that was never dealt with. And it's been dealt with now, and it's been dealt with comprehensively. And there will probably be a need for legislative changes in a lot of areas. And I have no doubt at the end of the day we're going to have a much better system.
McLaughlin's chomping on the bit to get
Most of them, I mean, leave out the phone recording, which is a historic thing, which I think won't amount to much ultimately. It has to be investigated for ensure people's rights were not abused, and it has to be investigated. I don't think a lot's going to come out of it. The main issues around all these controversies are the shortcomings in the 2005 Garda Síochána Act. That act grew out of the Morris Tribunal. It was supposed to be the new dawn in terms of oversight, in terms of proper structures, etc. It has been shown in relation to GSOC, in relation to whistleblowing, in relation to the Commissioner not being answerable to anybody, that there are severe shortcomings there. And I think that's what the Justice Committee is looking at. And hopefully that's a thing that will finally be addressed. But it has to be pointed out, most likely the reason there were shortcomings is in terms of the political will was still not there to reform the Gardaí. There is nothing really to believe that much has changed in that regard, apart from the fact that we're going to have a Garda authority which will stamp its own authority on the oversight.
And GSOC is going to be given greater powers.
It is, yeah. But again, it's back to, I mean, that's an additional thing.
And the confidential recipient office, which was a total, was a bit of a red herring of an office.
The theory behind it was all right. The problem was the practice.
Like Gareth Fitzgerald says, it might work in theory.
Look at the whole thing. Patrick, the problem with nearly all of the issues to do with the Garda Síochána goes back to a single thing, and that is the lack of political will by successive governments to have a proper force that was answerable and whose powers were curtailed where it needed to be. Everything can be traced back to that. It has been a political problem. Ultimately, the leadership was not given to the force going back through successive governments.
A number of your texts to 51551. JD says, what's all the hullabaloo about? This goes back 30 years, he says. Bernard and Block Rock, if the government parties think that kicking to touch here by way of setting up a commission will get them over the forthcoming elections, they're in for a rude awakening, he says. Another listener, Callanan was shafted a second time time when Leo Varadkar tried to spin that Callanan wanted to erase the tapes. Another texter says, if a prisoner has a case for compensation, so too would the solicitor he was speaking to. And Joe in Wexford says, we need similar policing arrangements as Northern Ireland to prevent a repeat of the abuses that have emerged. And I'll draw your attention to the front page of the Irish Times tomorrow. The headline is Fears of Tapes Being Destroyed Prompted Action. Government moves to rapidly establish Commission of Inquiry over tapes. Minister tells of concerns someone in the Guards wanted the tapes destroyed. Now, if that was the case, that's quite serious, isn't it? Because that is serious evidence that could be used within the review of cases.
Well, absolutely, if that was the case. I mean, and there's some dispute over that already. There are suggestions that the AG feared that there would be attempts to destroy tapes. It's just not known. But again, it's back to the issue of oversight. You mentioned earlier, Cormac, or sorry, might have been Tom mentioned about in terms of going through the tapes for the material that's on it, is best left to Garda HQ. Well, on the basis of what we know about the way anything internally is investigated by the Gardaí, I'd even wonder, is that a very good idea at this point? You know, it's...
Well, certainly it should be. I agree with you there,
Tom, Mick,
in the sense that it should be, if it is done, of course, obviously they should be retained, and so subject to verification. In other words, that if there's a preliminary analysis of the done at HQ or within the Gardaí, that they would be retained so that they could later on, either by the Commission of Investigation or somebody else, be independent verification of, you know, what's said to be on them.
But God almighty, everyone listen to yourselves on the panel. This is very, very serious, is it not? Because you're asking possibly the Gardaí to review the tapes, and then you're asking that the tapes, the evidence, be held. Because possibly of a lack of trust. But is that what you're all saying?
Well,
no,
but
no,
I mean,
no.
But sorry, what I'm saying is this.
Mick Clifford.
The experience, and look, this is goes back to pre-Donegal, go back to the penalty points, the O'Mahony report. The experience has been that internal Garda reports into issues that might cause controversy or difficulties for the force are not worth the paper they're written on, and that has been repeated. Because, well, quite obvious, it's back to, I'll quote Judge Smittix, loyalty above the truth in terms of the force. That has been seen again and again.
So basically people don't trust the force to do the review correctly, is
it? To the extent that if there is something... Look, if you have a guard who's robbing money, if you have a guard who's involved with criminals, his colleagues will come down like a ton of bricks in them. The problem is issues, cultural issues within the force that are... There's an acceptance of them and they're regarded as being okay because that's the way things are done. Repeatedly,
that's what I was saying. Isn't that the question I asked, Niall Collins? A lack of trust in the guards to do this type of work?
Well, there's 2 points. First of all, I was very disappointed. I think the public were disappointed to hear Leo Varadkar's comments yesterday, because, you know, he was doing a good cop act last week in terms of, calling it straight in relation to the whistleblowers. But I thought his comments yesterday were outrageous in relation to Martin Callanan, that, you know, that he was somehow engaged in some kind of an exercise to seek to destroy the tapes. And nothing could be further from the truth. And I think any reasonable perusal of the sequence of events, Martin Callanan acted properly and was seeking to act properly, and he involved the Attorney General, the Department of Justice and the Data Commissioner. Now, that being said, the possession of the tapes, it's my opinion, and I've said this yesterday, that the tapes and the inventory of the tapes and anything to do with the tapes and the tapes themselves should become the possession of the Commission of Investigation as soon as possible.
And not the guards. The guards shouldn't review solely.
Absolutely.
Why not?
Because they're the subject of the Commission of Inquiry, and they should become the property of the Commission of Inquiry to allow them to do their work properly. And the Gardaí obviously have questions to answer in relation to this. So, you know, it's right and proper in terms of the integrity of the Commission of Inquiry and the transparency and to get to the facts and to get to the truth, that the Commission of Inquiry or investigation, whatever you want to call it, takes possession of them, and that they oversee how they do it, whether they get another agency of the state or whether they get a secure third-party service provider to do it, to do all the detailed work in relation to the inventory and the tapes, what's on each tape and what it relates to.
Patrick O'Donovan, would you go along with that?
Well, I think that it's vital to find out, first of all, you know, what the tapes contain or they don't contain. And I think that will have to form the basis of the Commission of Investigation, because ultimately, you know, that's part of that's part of the answers that are going to be required, and they have confidence going forward. And ultimately, this is what this is about. People restoring, like Mick was saying there, it's the restoring of confidence, you know, wherever it has been damaged in the justice system, be it in the Department of Justice or in the Gardaí themselves. Because the longer it's going on, and I suppose the more narrative that's out there about it, it certainly isn't doing anybody any good at the moment to have it continuing going on and dragging on and dragging on. So the sooner that it's dealt with, the sooner that it's investigated and that the report is published, and that we find out, you know, as Mick earlier said earlier on, a lot of these tapes might have nothing at all in them, but we need to find out anyway what they do have. And some of them are going back over 30 years, and whether they're even relevant or not, we'll have to wait and see. But the practice that was there in the first instance, how it developed, how it, you know, kind of morphed into what was allowed up until 2013, all of that has to be gotten through to make sure ultimately, and I know it's been said in programmes like this before, but that it doesn't happen again.
The Justice Committee are meeting tomorrow, and they have requests, Mick Clifford, for the Secretary General of the Department of Justice, that's Brian Purcell, to appear before them, I think, Martin Callanan to appear before them, and Minister Alan Shatter to appear before them as well. Do you think that'll happen? Will they all appear?
Well, Brian Purcell and Alan Shatter, I think, probably will. Martin Callanan now is a private citizen. He's not obliged to do so. He has spoken from beyond the office, if you want to put it that way, through sources close to him, to use that euphemism, through the good offices of the Crown Correspondent here and a few other people. But whether he'd be prepared to come out and put his cards on the table in that regard, I would have my doubts, you know.
What about Taoiseach? Should he be requested?
If to find out what exactly the sequence was here. But, I mean, the more that comes out, it would certainly seem to be veering towards a position whereby everybody from the Commissioner, the Secretary General down, didn't wave real red flags in regard to this because they didn't consider it to be a massively serious issue. And if that's the case, and if their judgment was correct in that regard, are we talking about the government having bigged it up in order to alleviate the political problem they had? And therefore, if they're doing that, well, then they're messing around with the security of the state for politics, and that's a pretty serious issue. So, I mean, just to iron out what exactly happened, I think that would be a worthwhile
exercise. Is that what's happening, Patrick O'Donovan?
No. I don't believe that for 1 minute. I mean, you know, when if you go back to where this came out of, the Attorney General was doing, as far as I understand, preparing for a quarterly review that's done to Cabinet in relation to issues of cases that are due up and that might have a significance. And when these papers came about, she then notified the Taoiseach of the importance of it because, as far as I understand, she wasn't going to be at the Cabinet meeting on the Tuesday. The Taoiseach regarded it of such importance that he took the action that he took. Now, had he not taken the action that he took, and it came out afterwards that the attorney had, you know, made a report to the Cabinet the following Tuesday week after that. I mean, we'd be having a totally different conversation here tonight.
Why did everyone, it seems, keep Minister Alan Shatter in the dark about this from possibly last November? The AG, Martin Callanan, the Secretary General of the Department of Justice.
Well, I suppose.
Why wasn't he informed?
That's ultimately what the Commission of Investigation is going to have to find out as well.
That'd probably be on the I'd imagine that won't even be in the terms of reference, Patrick.
Well, we have to find out the sequence of events.
Oh, we do, but I can't imagine
the Commission inquiring. Patrick will be asking why not.
But the fairness now, the sequence of events is going to deduce who knew what and when and the actions that were taken and the steps that were taken and when so and so was notified and so and so was notified.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if that's in the terms of reference. But yeah.
Would you not like to find out? As a TD?
I'm sure we will find out.
Well, God almighty, this is why people castigate the Dáil every now and again.
No, it's not.
I'm telling you, this is why people, it seems, from...
The Commission of Investigation...
Castigate the Dáil from now on. It seems that the power is kept to a very, very small group. And it seems to the public sometimes that TDs don't ask questions and cannot get at people who have power.
But, Carmel, what you want me to do now is you want me to prejudge the outcome of the Commission of Investigation, in fairness to you, and you're doing a very good job of it.
I'm not.
I couldn't possibly comment.
My simple
answer is that there's a Commission of Investigation having been set up. That dictates how serious this is. These things are not set up like snuff of the wake. And it is serious. It's being dealt with appropriately. The Minister for Justice will participate in it and will cooperate with it. Other people will be expected to cooperate with it. Evidence will be taken. You know, the whole shebang will be out here and it will report to the Oireachtas. It'll be laid before both houses and it'll be debated as such. And I'm sure you'll have me back
again. But was that not the first question out of your lips when you heard, before this commission of investigation was set up, when you heard that the phone calls to Garda stations and from Garda stations were being recorded, and when you heard that the AG knew of this last November, that Martin Callanan knew of this, that there was a GSOC report last June outlining what was happening. Did you not say, how come the minister didn't know about this?
Well, did you know about it last June? I mean, if it came out last June...
I'm not the Minister for Justice.
No, but it was published in the Irish Examiner.
It was published in the Irish Examiner, but I don't remember it being... I don't remember anybody jumping off of the ceiling in Leinster House about it. That really and truly, the first I heard about it was...
Can I make one comment to that?
Tom O'Malley, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say this much. I mean, the purpose of a commission of investigation set out in the statute is to investigate a matter of significant public concern. And when it comes to drawing up the terms of reference, I mean, we have to ask, well, what are the public concerned about? And I would suggest, just as a member of the public who has been following all of this debate about the timeline over the past week or so, that the whole question, in the long term, given where we may be 6 months down the road when the Commission republishes its report, wherever it may be, is it really a matter of public concern? Who knew what, when and where? I would suggest that what is really a public concern is the substance of the issue, which is the question of the recordings, why they took place, the circumstances in which they took place, and, you know, what's in them. And that it would be far better if the terms of reference were, if you like, to concentrate on that, because I just don't understand what the long-term benefit would be for a commission of inquiry to engage in a very long investigation as to why some particular person, be it the Minister for Justice or anybody else, didn't know about something at some particular point.
Would you agree with that, Niall Collins?
I think in addition to what Tom is saying there, I think it's an issue of public concern as to why the Garda Commissioner was sacked, prematurely retired or resigned or whatever description you want to put on it, because the Garda Commissioner was doing his job. OK, it was an issue, and I had an issue myself in relation to his disgusting remark about the whistleblowers, and I called on him publicly on many occasions myself to withdraw it. We know that he was minded to withdraw it. We know it has been reported that he was advised not to do that by senior officials within the department. So why is it that the Garda Commissioner is now gone? That's an issue which is occupying the public mind. It's certainly an issue that I want to have answered. And I don't know, and I'm not hearing anything that's going to tell me that the terms of reference are going to be sufficiently broad to encompass that aspect of it.
That's far more suitable for an Oireachtas committee to investigate rather than a commission
absolutely,
of
yes. inquiry. Yeah. And, you know, we have to get to the bottom of that, because you can't have... when a government has to be responsible and accountable, you can't have, you know, senior public servants being just somehow shafted to save the skin of the minister. And that's what happened.
Are you not making political hay out of that?
No.
Because surely the minister or the Taoiseach cannot sack the Garda Commissioner. And the statement came from him, we assume, of his own free will. He said he didn't want to distract anymore from day-to-day operations of an Garda Síochána. Why can't you accept that at face value?
Well, nobody has explained, and the Taoiseach still hasn't explained, why Brian Purcell was sent to meet the Garda, former Garda Commissioner in his residence to express that there was disquiet at government and that he should sleep in it. And then when they communicated the following morning that the concern at Cabinet hadn't dissipated overnight, and then we're told subsequently that the Cabinet weren't aware of any of these events in any regard at that point in time. So it's a little bit of, you know, we'll make it up as we go along. And it's just not good enough that the Garda Commissioner, who was doing a good job in the eyes of the government, and they reached for him on every and any occasion to point to a success story. And so
before he retired, you said he wasn't doing a good job.
I didn't say that.
You said he handled things badly.
I said he handled the comments in relation to the whistleblowers badly. And I think the whole country agreed with that.
It will seem to people that you were on his back until he retired, Cormac.
Now, Collins, it seems to people
that you were on his back until he retired. And then when he's out of the way, you move on to someone else.
No, absolutely not. And I was asked on many occasions by people within this organisation and other broadcasting organisations why we weren't calling, like other opposition parties and other people, for the Garda Commissioner to resign. We felt, and I certainly felt, that he should have withdrawn the comments in relation to the whistleblowers. And we know that he was minded to do that. So, you know, there's an outstanding explanation, which we're not getting, and we're not getting anywhere near it. And all this conversation around the tapes is swirling around. And there's only one real biggie in there that's out there in the public domain, which is the Bailey case.
I think there is a point about the Garda Commissioner retiring, to use the euphemism, which I believe is what it is. There's no question, I think there should be some form of an investigation into that, because it is a very serious issue, and it certainly looks like he was given the metaphorical revolver and bottle of whiskey and said, you know, go rather than be...
he could have toughed, if what you're saying is right, he could have stayed. He could have toughed it out.
He could, but put it in the scenario as we are led to believe it was, and that the evidence that we do know would indicate it was, and that is that Mr. Purcell was sent to tell him that the government, or certainly the two members of cabinet who had the meeting that he had come from, Mr. Shatter and the Taoiseach, did not have confidence in him as a result of various things that were coming out. Now, that's the way it appears, and it appears that the following morning he rang again Mr. Purcell for reassurance, and he wasn't given that reassurance. In scenarios like that, it's up to an individual to tough it out or to resign and to put a gloss on it. And in most instances, the person involved would resign like that. You're right, he could have toughed it out, and if he toughed it out on the basis of his conduct during the discovery of this recording stuff, I think he'd have been perfectly justified to do so. But it was the confluence of all the different things coming at one, and the political pressure being ratcheted up by both Labour and even within Fine Gael Liberal.
But he had been under severe pressure from various politicians and from the media for a number of weeks. Why do you think that suddenly he gets a visit from a senior official from the Department of Justice, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back?
Well, the way it would appear is when this other issue came to the fore about the recordings, it was one more mounting controversy, even though, again, emphasising that there doesn't seem to be any culpability in the way the Commissioner held conducted himself during it. But you can't get away from the fact the Minister for Justice was under political pressure. This was a way of easing, it was a valve effectively to take the heat off everything and to switch complete focus onto this thing of the recordings, take it away from the main issue. And I'd emphasise as well, going back to this disgusting remark, such a big deal was made about that. That was only symptomatic of the way the Commissioner handled the whole issue of allegations of malpractice within his force. And his attitude was mirrored by the Minister for Justice, and it would seem now that that has been forgotten in terms of the new thing that has arisen.
But look, one interpretation, Niall Collins, is that he was shafted. That's your interpretation. Another interpretation could be, could it not, that he got the visit from Brian Purcell, Martin Callanan, and he said to himself, look, this is rumbling on for far too long. I don't want to distract from An Garda Síochán anymore. I'm a good servant of the justice system for many years. I'm going to do my bit for that system, and I'm going to step aside.
No, because he was dealing with this new issue, the tapes, the telephone recording. He was dealing with it progressively and competently. That's the facts. I don't need to recite it for you, but you have to look at this in terms of the pattern of events. Look at the whistleblowers. They were vilified. Look at the confidential recipient. Look at what he said in relation to the minister. And when he didn't repudiate what he said, because he couldn't deny what he said, because it was taped and transcripted, so he was shafted and sacked. If you look at GSOC, when the issue of the GSOC bugging came into the public domain, suddenly GSOC were put in the dock and they were vilified for, you know, and we don't need to rehearse all of that. So it's always somebody else's fault. And the minister isn't taking responsibility or accountability. And that's the issue that I have.
We could be discussing the substance, and the Dáil could be discussing the substance of all of these issues, discussing possible reforms. But now we're talking about lauding or castigating Alan Shatter in the Dáil today. Is it because of Fianna Fáil's vote of no confidence in Minister Alan Shatter? Is it not a waste of Dáil time? Because patently, you don't have the numbers.
Yeah, well, you see, that's all of what gets said. You know, it's a waste of time. You're playing the man. You're not playing the ball. It's all the usual rhetoric.
Is it not correct?
And when
you never use that rhetoric in government.
When this government are faced with any dissenting voices, any alternative argument, any minority, anybody who's offering a different opinion, it's crush dissent, and you can go right back along the pattern of it. I mean, you even tried to do it with the Shannon referendum. It's all about centralising power, dismiss anybody who's offering an alternative point of view. But I'm sorry, the public out there have made up their mind in relation to Alan Shatter and his oversight and his ability to administer. Because I talk to people every single day of the week, and Fine Gael people and the backbenchers know it in their own hearts and souls.
Patrick.
They know it.
Well, you know, we know now what the outcome of the investigation is going to be. We know now what the outcome of the tribunal is going to be, or the Commission of Investigation is going to be. And we even know what's inside my head. I don't know.
Tell us the terms of reference, though.
Well, sure, you'll find out soon enough. But I mean, I think the drama that has been tried to be cooked up around this, you know, the real issue here is that the drama that's trying to be cooked up around this. About emotion and no confidence.
About one of the most serious crises in the Department of Justice in decades.
The reason that the motion
you're saying we're trying to cook up a drama, is that right?
No, Fianna Fáil are at it. And the reason that they're at it is because there's Sinn Féin's turn next week for private members' time, and they didn't want to get gazumped in their own flank by having a private member's motion and no confidence in the minister. I mean, one of the things that they could have done is that they could have used private members' time over the last 3 years to address any of the range of anomalies that Mick's pointed out there from the start, and you know they didn't, and this seems to me now a perfect case of
I'll give you an example, Patrick. We have published legislation to reform GSOC, to bring in all the reforms that Mick Clifford was referring to there, which GSOC want and which everybody has now agreed. It's there, it's on the order paper. The government could bring it forward. It might come out of the lottery for one of these Friday sittings. But you know what? It's like all the bills that get onto the floor of the Dáil on a Friday sitting. The government might agree with some of them. They might vote down some of them. And any of the ones that they'll tell you they'll agree with, they'll sit there and they'll never progress beyond second stage. So that's what you're dealing with.
You're saying you're being stifled in
absolutely.
Opposition.
So Patrick's saying we should use this time to do something
relation,
more productive.
In relation to the,
when
in
we do that,
the,
it doesn't get taken forward.
But in relation to the charade that was going on inside in the Dáil this evening, I mean, the substantive issue of the reform of the judicial and the justice system wasn't mentioned at all. It was all go after Alan Shatter, go after his personality, go after him as an individual. One after another, they stood up to have a go at him. And I mean, in fairness to him, one of the things that he did say, and I was just saying it to Mick before we came in, when Alan Shatter stands up and he defends himself against the Willie O'Dees of the world, who personalise, you know, very kind of tough comments against him, and some of them could be quite nasty from some members of the opposition, and when he stands up and he uses language that they mightn't agree with, he's termed arrogant. And you know, that's the narrative that's coming. That's the narrative. He said, hand over your seal of office. He says, you're finished. I mean, how's that a personalised remark? That's sort of old claptrap. This is a man, it took him long enough to hand back his own seal of office.
But that's not a personalised remark.
Why hasn't the minister come before any media outlet at all over the last week or two to explain his position?
Because if he did that, I mean, he was inside in the Dáil last Thursday for over 7 hours, and some of the opposition benches were empty.
Okay, will he Thursday out of it? Friday, Saturday? Sunday, Monday.
He's answerable to the Dáil, and he'd be there all day. He'd be there tomorrow evening.
He's answerable to the people as well.
Well, he is, through the Dáil. And I mean, it's not as if he's not making himself available to the Dáil.
He hasn't made himself available, as far as I can see, to any media outlet over the last week or two.
Well, look,
am I wrong?
I don't know. I mean, I don't follow him around and to see who he's talking to and who he's not talking to.
Mick Clifford,
tell you one thing. Last Thursday, when he was in for the full day, you could see the tumbleweed blowing through the opposition benches because there was no one there.
But he was reading from a prepared script. People want questions and answers.
He was answering questions as well, which were pre-prepared by research officers.
I think there probably can be too much emphasis on Alan Shatter. I mean, the problems are much bigger than him. But I have to say that that decision today to the subcommittee on justice to oversee the implementation of the Garda Authority, I mean, I don't think there's any way of looking at but a serious slap in the face from his own Taoiseach. This, after all, is a minister that his colleagues lauded as being a man who worked morning, noon and night and who managed to get through acres of legislation to effectively dilute his role in this very important aspect of the criminal justice system is really an indication that his leader is...
You think it's a vote of no confidence?
To a certain extent,
from yeah. From the cabinet?
From the Taoiseach, whom he has been very loyal to,
It's a clear demonstration by both parties in government that this is something they're taking very seriously.
Can I ask you very briefly, in the minute I have left, Mick Clifford, on Labour's stance, are they under pressure tomorrow in the confidence vote that they have to vote and stand shoulder to shoulder with Alan Shatter? Are they happy to do so?
I wouldn't say they're delighted to do so, but Niall might remember members of the Green Party having to do so for some Fianna Fáil ministers who had walked into serious controversy. And, you know, I think the heat of it in that regard is going out of it. Where an issue will arise is that two reports are due by Easter, whether they'll be in by Easter or not, the GSOC report into the bugging affair and the Geering report into Sergeant McCabe's allegations. That, I think, will create more controversy again. And it's a question of whether Mr. Shatter can get past that.
Okay, Michael Clifford has the final word this evening. My thanks to Mick Clifford, Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, Patrick O'Donovan of Fine Gael, and Tom O'Malley, Garin na Gaileabh, Wimshe, Cormac O'Hara, agus an Wuidhinn ar Fad, Mersin, Slán agus Beannacht.
The Late Debate was produced by Donal O'Herlihy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. Richie Byrne was on research, and sound supervision tonight was by Mark Dwyer.